Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Christine McIver from the Kids Cancer Foundation of Alberta.
So tell me a little bit about the foundation.
Well, the Kids Cancer Care Foundation was founded in 1994 in response of having the need for recreational programs, research, all of the things, all of the supports that children with cancer in Alberta really needed.
So what sparked the initial work?
Well, the initial work was sparked back in early 1990. My son was going through a bone marrow transplant, and I needed a carrot to get him through the treatment. And of course, that was the carrot at that time I used was to go out to camp in BC. And we didn't have one here in Alberta, and so I knew that there was one there, and it would help to get him there by just encouraging him to get through that transplant and have something to look forward to. The camp gave him hope that once he was through his treatment that he would be able to go to Camp Good Times in BC. So my son Derek had to go to the camp in BC called Camp Good Times, and of course it was a long way to travel, and only 20 kids with cancer could actually go to that camp. So I decided that you know, in order to make sure that every child with cancer that was diagnosed in Alberta got a chance to do something very normal, like go to camp, that I would start a camp here in Alberta. And so for the first 4 years, we worked under the auspices of the Canadian Cancer Society. And then just knowing that children with cancer needed a lot more programs and services, I founded Kids Cancer Camps, which since grew to the Kids Cancer Care Foundation, and today funds research in hospital programs, education, support, scholarships, and of course, all of our camp and outreach programs.
So, have you seen a lot of community support for this work?
Yeah, we sure have. We've been very fortunate in the Alberta community to be supported the way that we have over the last 22 years. It's been really vital to make sure that you know, as one organization in a large province that has, we see about 120 to 130 children diagnosed every year, that they have the programs and services they need to grow and thrive through that diagnosis.
So, are there any challenges in the work you do?
Well, There are many challenges in the work that Kids Cancer Care Foundation does. One of them is we receive very little government funding, so of course we have to raise all of the funds ourselves. And, well, we've got good support. The economy of late has been a huge challenge. I think the other types of challenges we might see are, you know, making sure that that we provide the very best programs and services we possibly can. there's a lot more gifts than there are challenges, actually. We've got wonderful working relationships with the Alberta Children's Hospital and the Stollery Children's Hospital in Edmonton, and, enjoy great collaborations throughout the province with other agencies that are trying to do the very best they can for children with cancer. We've got really good relationships with boards of education to make sure that any of the education factors are worked into ensuring that when kids are going back to school that they're getting the early interventions that they need. We've started tutoring programs. We're finding the statistics now with, if we look at the number of kids that go through treatment and care in Alberta, so if we've got 160 new diagnoses a year, we'll see that 70% of those children will have some kind of long-term effect, and of those, 30% are going to be severe long-term effects. So the real focus today, of course, in any of the research that we fund, and we're seeing this in the research that's being conducted, is to first do research that mitigates long-term effects as much as possible. First, we want cure. Second, of course, is to make sure that those long-term effects are mitigated. So that's not just the focus of the research that's funded by the Kids Cancer Care Foundation, but in fact, throughout Canada and the rest of the world.
So, to look at the converse side of things, what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed with the foundation?
I think watching the stats for childhood cancer survival rate go consistently up, since the 1960s, and 70s, when childhood cancer research really began to get formalized, we have seen the number of children, let's say, with the most common type of cancer is, of course, childhood leukemia, ALL. And it used to be that 20% of those children survived. Now it's 80% of those children will survive. We'll still lose 20% of them, which is not acceptable. But we've also seen other great advances in childhood Wilms tumor, for instance, which is a kidney tumor, Hodgkin's disease, those kinds of numbers have completely turned around, where we're seeing really high success rates, as high as 95%. And I think there is great hope for the future that more research is going to be funded, and especially research that is going to first do as little harm as possible. The advent of kids' cancer camps throughout the country has also been really encouraging. The doctors and nurses, when they're in the hospital, have the chance to cure these children. But when they leave the hospital, and the camp agencies and foundations like Kids Cancer Care are able to provide programs and services for these kids, we make sure that they do indeed survive and thrive in body, mind, and spirit. And it's through our camp and our outreach programs that children in Alberta enjoy, but throughout different agencies across Canada, they indeed enjoy those kinds of benefits as well. It's the things that we can't see, the psychosocial challenges that they're going to have after they're diagnosed. We want to make sure that they are thriving tomorrow. A diagnosis of childhood cancer will indeed impede a lot of their chances to be the very best in society. And we're going to try and remove many of those barriers through helping them through leadership skills, building up their confidence and their self-esteem, knowing that they can be everything that they hope to be. We know that they have to be smarter, faster, stronger, and first in line. And those are the kinds of skills and confidence we want to give them so that they know that they can be the very best that they could even before having been diagnosed with cancer.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Ken.
I don't think there are any scarier words to a parent than your child has cancer. But the fact that the rates have gone so much greater of survival, and the support work that is being done for these kids,
helping them recognize they're not alone. That's key. Fact of the matter is, these kids need to know that a lot of the battle comes from their drive, their determination to live and to reach their best. It's foundations such as this one that are providing real and meaningful opportunities for these children. Fact is, nobody knows what their potential is, what they might accomplish in years to come. But it's up to us in society not to give up on them, not to say, you've got this disease, so you don't have a future. That's no one's right to say. These kids, they're living longer, happier, healthier lives, thanks to the work that's being done. And that's something we as a society need to look at and say, what's the next step? What can we do to build upon the existing work? And that is so vital, because you're not just building policies or accommodations or medical treatments. You're building for the future. You're building for a generation that will someday stand as leaders. These kids might create or accomplish anything. But the point is, we have to keep on encouraging them, telling them they can beat this, giving them the right opportunity, giving them the right support. It's the right of every person to have a little hope. Whether or not their condition seems daunting or overwhelming, everyone is entitled to some hope. Because no condition anywhere is without hope. There's nothing that could convince me that someday we won't have a cure or a better treatment for all the conditions out there. Occasionally you do hear those stories of people who have just defied the odds. They've been told their situation's hopeless, they said they're not willing to accept it, and they did not. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadians are being bought and sold. We can no longer ignore this reality. Each of the 27 million human trafficking victims around the globe has a unique story. 80% of victims are women, 50% are children. This is not only a global injustice, but a local reality. It is happening right now in my community. We are asking you to take action today. Visit endexploitation.com. Get informed and take action. British anti-slavery leader William Wilberforce once said, "Having heard all this, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never say again that you did not know. Only question now is what will you do?" Join us and help eliminate human slavery in Canada.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Christine McIver from the Kids Cancer Care Foundation of Alberta. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Heather Down, who's developing a unique project concerning autism awareness. Tell me a little bit about the work you're doing surrounding autism.
Well, I would like to raise more awareness regarding autism. So I own a small publishing company, an independent publishing company, and my grandson is also on the spectrum. So we've decided to put together a coloring book, an adult coloring book, because it's quite on trend right now, but also features inspirational and educational quotes about autism. And we've just published it.
So what sorts of quotes are you including with the project?
Oh, well, inspirational quotes. Some of them are a little more academic, and some of them are very just kind of inclusive, I guess would be the best word to say. For example, we have a quote that normal is a drier setting. Another quote talks about if you meet one person with autism, you meet one person with autism.
So, have there been any challenges in putting this all together?
Yes, I would say so. The first big challenge, of course, is to get the artwork. I created some of the artwork in the book. In addition, I also commissioned some and also licensed some artwork. Also, finding some really important touching quotes. That took a little bit of effort, too. I mean, there are lots and lots of quotes about autism, but finding the right fit was a bit of a challenge at times. So I would say those were the main things.
So, on the converse side of things, has there been any success throughout this project that you'd like to share?
Yes, I would say so. I think it's garnered quite a bit of media attention, which is great. The other thing that has happened is Autism Speaks Canada have come on board, and we are going to be donating a portion of the proceeds to them. And that is just in time, too, for World Autism Awareness Day, which is April 1st.
So how are you going about spreading the word about this work?
Well, thanks to wonderful people like you,
through
the media, that helps. Of course, social media is a big thing these days. And basically just talking about autism and the whole idea of a spectrum. I mean, you can't really put a person into an actual square peg because the whole thing is it's a spectrum and everyone's a little bit different.
So if you don't mind my asking, you mentioned having a family member with the condition. Can you tell me a little bit about his situation?
Well, my grandson is on the spectrum, and he's actually a high-functioning person on the spectrum, which, believe it or not, holds a whole different set of challenges. Because it seems when someone's high on the spectrum, teachers or anyone that's dealing with the person focuses on what he can or she can do. And sometimes then the challenges for that person are overlooked because the person presents the same as someone with who is not on the autism when you first meet him. The expectations sometimes are unrealistic and the subtleties aren't picked up upon, and then that becomes more challenging for the person. My grandson is 6 years old now and he's in grade one. And kindergarten was a wonderful experience for him. However, in grade one, the expectations are quite different. And that has been actually quite challenging. He's a bit delayed with language, and he takes things very literally, and he likes routine. But he presents like anyone else in the classroom. So the communication process with the people who work with him has been really important.
So what sorts of supports has he been receiving through his education?
Sorry?
So, what sorts of educational supports, if any, has he been given?
Oh, thank you. Well, to start with, the school was actually quite reluctant. However, now they make accommodations for him. He's also going to be put on an individual education plan. He doesn't have an educational assistant or anything like that. However, he might be given more time to complete a task. He also might have one-on-one with the teacher when it comes to writing down his answers. Instead of writing, someone might scribe it for him. He gets time. He has sensory issues, so sometimes he needs time alone, or he might need something to squeeze or play with his hands. So the school has been very good now with helping with those types of accommodations.
So if you could send any one message about the need for greater education concerning autism, what would you say?
I would say the greatest need is understanding because, again, it's such a spectrum. And to understand that a student might be high functioning doesn't mean there aren't accommodations necessary. So really to understand the condition and to realize that there are things that can be done, that would be my biggest message.
So what are the next steps in your raising awareness?
Well, with this particular coloring book, adult coloring book, Color Up the Spectrum, we're hoping to, of course, it's for sale on Amazon. We're hoping to raise funds to donate, of course, to Autism Speaks Canada. And then we might be doing a follow-up book. We're still kind of thinking about how things go. But generally, we just want to get the word out there, talk about the book. It's kind of like a handshake to open the door to the discussion.
So, do you think so far you've seen any bridges built in this way?
I would say so. I mean, it's a different world now than it was 20 years ago. That's for sure. I mean, we've come a long way, but I still think there's a long ways to go. So even with this process, with this book, even being able to talk to people about it and to open up that, yes, my grandson is on the spectrum, and people kind of understanding, because a lot of people who know my grandson do not know he's on the spectrum. And it's just, you know, little aha moments. So I do believe bridges are being built, and certainly with the school we've come a long way that works directly with my grandson.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you so much, Cam.
Of course. What a gift to give to a young child who's still wondering, what is my condition? What does it mean? Will I ever be able to have, quote-unquote, a normal life? What a gift to say to them, you are a valuable, wonderful person with potentials and opportunities that should be created for you. And I'm going to bring this to the attention of the public in a way that's easy for them to relate to. The fact is, what usually sparks disability interest is having it happen to somebody you know, a family member, a friend. But the truth is, we should always have open minds and open hearts. We should be prepared for that day when we're going to encounter someone with a disability. It is simply a preparatory measure, because if we're ready, if we understand that autism spectrum doesn't mean that a person is nonverbal, non-functional, then we'll have a better understanding. You can't just assume it means one thing for everybody. It's not so. Education is the strongest tool we have. And the truth is, the biggest disability you will ever hope to find is prejudice and preconceived notions. It's the biggest disability anywhere. So, we have a choice, my dear friends. We can choose to assume we know what a condition means based on questionable or incomplete information we've heard. We can choose to say, that's good enough, I'll take the first answer. Or we can go a little deeper. We can ask the question, is there a chance that someone is strong enough, smart enough, functional enough to build a meaningful life with this condition? And in almost every case you will ever hope to hear, there is that someone. That someone who's taken their condition and just run right over it. They've said, this is not going to be the thing that breaks me. There is not going to be a thing that breaks me. Because disability also means you learn what human strength really means. You learn you can survive so much more than you ever thought you could. And you learn there are so many good-hearted people out there. You always hear bad news. This guy shot that guy, or the economy's in the toilet, what have you. But when you hear of something like this, what on the surface is a very simple project, just to create something to build a bridge, to build some understanding. I'd call that good news. I'd call that a seed of hope in the world. And that's what we all need, especially people with disabilities. If they find, they feel that they're facing their condition all alone, the battle is 10 times harder. But it's not necessary to go through it alone. Cutting off ties, cutting off supports, is the worst thing you can possibly do when you're facing a condition. Ask the questions. Find out, has anyone managed to build with this? Has anyone managed to find the next advancement? Is this information current? Is it complete? If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Truth is, providing opportunities for children who have disabilities, that's the key. Because you're not just having an impact on them. You're creating waves. Children see another of their peers isolated or cast aside. They're going to grow up. They're going to think that's how it should be. People with a difference should be excluded. Or they can see people with a difference participating, really being a part of a classroom experience, sporting event experience, and as they grow up, a workplace, social structures, what have you. It's all about awareness. It is all about understanding. If we have that, we can cut through the clouds, the myths that surround our way of thinking. It's easy just to rest on our laurels and to say that we understand it all because we are the able-bodied. That means we should know better than a person with a disability. Quite to the contrary, no one can speak better to what a person with a disability needs than they themselves, because they know what they've tried. They know what works. They know what doesn't. And they know which policies are really effective. I find it a tragedy that Heather and her family had to pressure the school system into a little equality. Why in God's name would that be a thing? Why would a school system hesitate to create simple fairness? This is a child we're talking about. Someone who's having to face a difficult condition, who doesn't know why things are a little bit different. And you can't hold it against someone with no control over it. Fact is, I'm grateful the school decided to work with them on this, but it shouldn't have been an uphill battle. It shouldn't have taken any special effort. They should have just said, this is a child, we're going to support them just as we would any other. These people have families. They have family lines. Somewhere in their history, there has been someone with a disability. So, to cast aside anyone with a disability is to cast aside a vital part of who you are. And I don't think any among us would do that. But to be that support, to be that voice that says, you can do it, it creates a whole new future, a whole new outlook. And every child has the potential to succeed. We stand alongside them. They may grow up as a person with a disability, but they will still grow up to be a strong, capable person. And they will recognize that their condition is simply one part of the equation. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.